This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you, maybe your next-door neighbor, maybe even in your own family. And so often, we don't realize what some of these people have done for the sake of our freedom. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we listen, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Father's Day is fast approaching, and maybe it'll be an opportunity for you to get your dad or your grandpa to talk about his own military service. The gentleman we're going to meet today has quite a story from World War II, and he always has a great Father's Day because he is the father of 14 children. Yeah, I said 14, and we're going to hear briefly from one of those 14 before we're done. Francis O'Brien, 91 years old, a veteran of the 4th Marine Division. For the last 70 years, he's made his home in Modesto, California. And that's where I caught up with him in the studios of Hometown Heroes affiliate KFIV. We'll start with his growing up years in Northeast Philadelphia.
It was fantastic. We were free to do whatever we wanted to do, whenever we wanted to do, as long as you were home by 10 o'clock at night. I was raised by a grandmother, because my mother was a single parent, an immigrant, who went to work in the mill when she was 13, stayed in the mills until she was 81. Her first phrase would be when she finished work, she'd come home and she'd say to my grandmother, "What did he do today?" And my grandmother would lie and not tell her everything that was done. But it was just a wonderful life. I had good times with them. I had good times with the kids. I enjoyed the neighborhood. We used to play a game called half ball. We had half a rubber ball and a broomstick. And it was a mill across the street. And if you hit it above the second floor, it was a triple. If you hit it over the roof, it was a home run, which meant you were batting practically vertically up and down with the. But it was a great game.
Well, and I understand you used to sneak over to see some real baseball with the Philadelphia Phillies. What was your trick for getting out of school and getting to the ballpark?
I take poison ivy and rub the leaves up and down my arms. And then once they started getting red, I'd show them to the teacher and say, And she'd say, "You better go home, Francis." And I'd walk down the corner, hop a truck, and go out to the ball game and stand there just looking in. Usually the guy would say, "How come not in school, kid?" And I'd show him my arms and say, "Well, they sent me home." He'd say, "Well, next guy comes in sneaking behind very closely, so just registers one rather than two." It was just a simple, good life. No one had much money, but you didn't need money.
And you were quite the high school athlete. What was your best sport?
I was a swimmer, and I guess they did that because that was probably the only place where we had hot water all the time, but that was another story. It was a lighthouse boys club, but the only problem was the pool was only 23 and a half yards long, and there was no tile on the pool. It was all raw concrete. That's where you worked out, and that's where you swam, and it was also a good, clean life.
Well, and it was good enough to get you a scholarship to St. Joseph's?
It got me a scholarship to St. Joseph's. My mother, being a single parent, she wanted me to quit high school when I was 16. And the coach said, "Why don't I put in for the National Youth Administration Program," which was a New Deal thing that Eleanor Roosevelt really pushed it. She wanted kids in school rather than in the unemployment line. I put in for it. I was paid $7 a month. That satisfied my mother so I could finish high school. Because of the scholarship, I now went to college. And then the war came along. I went down to enlist on December the 9th and went through the whole routine, and then the sergeant said, "Well, what are you doing now?" And I said, "I'm a freshman at St. Joseph's College." He said, "Well, why don't you go back and finish your first year of school?" And I remember kind of slapping him on the shoulder saying, "Don't you know there's a war going on?" And he said, "Don't worry, we'll take care of it until we're ready for you." So with that disappointment, I went back to St. Joe's. We finished school. I get in the Marine Corps. I was put in a room with a colonel, and he had me raise my right hand. And before I knew it, I was in the Marine Corps. And he said, "And incidentally, you're in charge of 25 men going down to Paris Island. So the next afternoon at 3 o'clock, we were down at the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad Station. My mother, my grandmother, my mother's new husband went down to see me off. We got down to Union Station in Washington. I had never seen so many servicemen in my life. It was packed. And we finally get aboard the train, and there were no seats. We were known as the Boots because we still had civilian clothes. We didn't have military clothes like the other guys. They all had seats, and we sat in the aisle. Then we got to Paris Island. The trains were all jammed up in those days. It took us 9 hours to go 45 miles. And then finally, it got going down through South Carolina. And I remember as we got off in Yamasee, South Carolina, it's the first time I'd ever seen drinking fountains for white men, drinking fountains for other men. And then they had drinking fountains for black men and drinking fountains for black women. They had lavatories with four different doors, and I had never seen that before. So now we got on the train to go from Yamasee to Port Royal, and you're going through the woods of South Carolina, all that moss hanging down, and some sergeant, little platoon sergeant, with a .45 on his hip, stepped between the cars, and he said, "Now, we're going to go through this woods," he said, and then he suddenly puts his head out the window, "I'll shoot." And I thought, what part of the country is this? What constitution am I defending? And off we went. We get into Port Royal, and there's a big old cattle truck there. We all load into the cattle truck, about 125 guys. They drive us on to Paris Island. They say, go over the bridge into Paris Island, and there all the Boots are saying, "You'll be sorry." They gave us a poker chip as we got off the truck. Took the poker chip into the barber, and the clippers were hot. You sat down, and I thought I had short hair, but no, they cut your hair off. And boot camp began, and then, of course, near the end of boot camp, they start lining you up for what kind of position you're going to get. What assignment are you going to have? Well, I wanted to be a tail gunner in the Avenger plane, and I was given all this encouragement. Yes, oh, yeah, you're this, you're that. And I had never fired a rifle in my life, and here I am now trying to hit a target. But anyway, it all worked out, and I made marksman. So then comes the assignment time. I'm assigned to the rifle range as a coach. I kept thinking, what about this Avenger plane? Why didn't I get that? Well, first of all, you're supposed to be like 5'6", weigh 150 pounds. And I was 6 feet and weighed 190 pounds. So, I mean, they were lying. So I thought, well, you know, this is not for me. So then my grandmother became ill. Got a phone call saying, you know, my grandmother was sick. So and in those days, no one said about the Red Cross. No one said about go to see the chapel. None of that business. You were there. And I used to walk 6 miles to try to make a phone call at night. Never could get out. Then finally on Saturday morning, I said, I want to go home. I want an emergency leave. My grandmother's ill. I want to go home. Well, some sergeant with hash marks up to his ears said, she's only your grandmother. And I really blew the top down. I said, hey, she's the one that raised me, and I want to go home. It took me 27 hours to go from Paris Island to Philadelphia. Got off of Philadelphia about the 3rd of December, I think, something like that. After my grandmother, she had died the Friday night, and I didn't get home until Sunday night. And that made me a little bit bitter. And then we had the funeral. Then I went back to Paris Island. Well, now I'm assigned to a different platoon. The thing about it, I got assigned to the rifle range. And the first thing you do is find out, how do you get off the island? Well, you volunteer for something. I volunteered for every opening that came up. Then finally, about 6 months later in August, I got accepted by the 4th Marine Division. And I was going to be in the 4th Marine Fleet Marine Force. Well, I thought this was, to me, sounds like you're going to be on the ship. But that's just the name. The FMF is the Fleet Marine Force. You're the guy that lands, and you're the guy that has to do the ground stuff. I was sent to the 4th Division. There were 17 cars in our train load that came from Paris Island to Oceanside, California. So then finally, he took us to San Diego and put us aboard a ship. And the ship came up around San Francisco and then went back. We did that several times in a course of, you know, 6 or 8 weeks. All the time they were doing this, they were loading the ship and coming back and not quite unloading the ship. I suppose no one knew that we were getting ready to go. So then finally on January the 13th, we were told there'll be no more liberty. Don't send anything out. You can't make phone calls and all that business. And we said, why? Well, what do you think? We're leaving tomorrow morning. And the next morning, we got aboard a cattle car, and they took us down to San Diego, and we got aboard the ship. And the first thing they said was, we will store your sea bags in the hold of the ship, so get everything packed. Pack your greens. You won't need them anymore. Put them on your sea bag. And we did that. Then about 3:30 in the afternoon, they said, any man that has greens may go ashore. We thought, wait a minute. You told us we couldn't go ashore. Our greens are in a sea bag. So, you know, all of this does is just mold you into a thinking process of where you're going to beat them. 15 of us decided once it got dark, we'd go over the side of the ship, go under the pier, and then go. There was a club up on the hill, and I forget the name of the club in San Diego. And we got up there, the 15 of us. We ordered 15 bottles of Acme beer. And as he's opening the beer, the shore patrol came in. Took us out, put us in their wagon, took us back to the ship, and there we were. We waited about 20 minutes later, did the same thing, under the pier, back to the same place, ordered the 15 bottles, shore patrol came again. Took us back to the ship and scolded us and all that jazz. We waited about a half an hour over the side of the ship again, down under the pier, up to the beer dispensers. They never came, the shore patrol didn't come, so about 2 o'clock in the morning, we're still up there drinking beer, and then we came back to the ship, and we had made our point that, I mean, you know, you double-crossed us by having us put the greens away and then telling us we could go ashore. So we made our point.
And before long, they'd be making invasions in the Pacific. When we come back, a 20-year-old Marine heads into battle. His very first taste of combat almost claimed his life. Check out photos of Mr. O'Brien at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.
You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.